Okay, well, hi, everybody. Some of you know me. A few of you don't. My name is Natalie Rahal. I'm a fiction major here, journalism minor, and editor-in-chief of Leviathan. And I also had the great fortune this summer of interning in Vanity Fair's West Coast office under Krista Smith, who is the senior West Coast editor there. And I'm here to introduce her, obviously. Krista graduated from Colorado College in 1986, where she majored in English and played soccer. She then moved to New York City, and her experiences from CC helped her to land a job as a freelance fact checker. Through her work in this capacity, Smith became an associate research editor for Vanity Fair, then was made a features associate, and was finally awarded her current position as senior West Coast editor. Krista has worked from New York City, London, and Los Angeles, where she currently resides and acts as Vanity Fair's Hollywood liaison and covers all things film, celebrity, and pop culture. She has written innumerable cover stories for Vanity Fair and plays a key role in the magazine's Vanity segment, the production of the Hollywood issue, and is an interviewer extraordinaire. Her insatiable curiosity, clever conversational interview and writing styles, and passion for the future of journalism have kept her and Vanity Fair on the cutting edge of magazine journalism. I first met Krista last year. Through pure serendipity, I was in LA only a short while after hearing about an opening for a Vanity Fair intern. In response, I pounded out the longest, most meticulous three-sentence email ever written, pleading with Krista and her assistant to give me 2 minutes of time I was sure that a senior editor for Vanity Fair wouldn't have. But she made time. I planned out my most professionally trendy interview outfit, brought resume and cover letters, and remember feeling pretty dizzy atop my 5-inch heels as I made my way up to the 12th floor. When I was led back to Krista's office, I put my shoulders back, plastered on my most confident smile, and tried to breathe normally. I entered her corner office, where Krista shook my hand and offered me a seat on a soft, cozy couch. She smiled warmly, relaxed, and cracked a joke that I was too stylish for their office. I laughed nervously and said, "Surely not," and thought that I was going to faint right there. What a little snot I must have looked like, all gussied up like that. But Krista just started talking, asking questions, sipping her coffee, and swinging her boot at ease. Before I knew it, the interview was over. I had no idea what Krista thought of me, but I had the most eerie sense that in those 20 minutes, she had somehow figured out everything there was to know about me. Krista Smith is a master interviewer, quick-witted and equipped with an incredible intuition and skill for eliciting information. Smith is unfailingly engaging to both her subjects and her audience. I learned more about the art of the interview and the hard, exciting work that is the magazine publication business in the 3 months I spent working under her than any class could ever have taught me. But don't take my word, take it from Krista herself. Without further ado, please join me in welcoming Krista Smith.
Can I meet that girl?
All right, I have, since I tortured my new assistant, who Natalie did not meet, in getting me material for this, I'm gonna play this 3-minute reel that they just put together, just to give you an idea of the elements. We're going to talk a lot. I'm going to talk a lot because we have a lot of time. Obviously, you have nowhere else to be. We have this until 9 o'clock. Let's see how far we go. But this is the stuff that I've been doing recently. This is a different kind of print journalism. I never imagined I would be doing this kind of stuff. I never imagined I'd be in front of the camera post 40. Vanity at that age is tough to reconcile if you haven't ever dealt with it before. But this is where. This is the new stuff, so I'm going to let you look at this, and then I'm going to talk, and you're going to have to come help me figure out how this is going to work, because I'm on a Dell. Did it not? Microsoft fronts. Might not work, or maybe not.
Maybe
might not
it's
work.
Working. Oh, you had to get up the windows? That's weird. I guess we just hit the
X. Let's see if it goes. If it doesn't go, then it doesn't matter. Yeah, it may not work.
Go to my computer. Maybe service.
Yeah, you might.
Maybe.
I put it in. I
love
it.
We'll see.
Ah. Yeah. Good.
It should. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, you're going to have to pretend you want to go through all this.
We're going to.
It should. Promising.
Well, shoot.
Do you get any, is it working? Volume? I don't know if we get any volume.
Wonder if this is, okay.
This is like Wayne's World. It's even better now, you can get.
Okay, it's not muted. Okay. Okay,
oh, some Tebow.
Darn it.
Looks good though.
Shoot. Let me see.
Oh, Brad. No dice?
That's left.
This looks like it's. Where is this like, volume going up all the way up? I don't know what to do.
There, I have to say, it's time.
It's
hard to make you not look.
What did you do?
But you know what we did? We're not here.
I'm gonna start over again, okay? How's that?
This is your 36th and 37th. I'm not going to get
Okay, let's see if we can stop that. That's all the show and tell I have. We made it through that, though. We should be very proud, right? All right. You can get this so you don't have to look at that. Like that? Will that do it? Yeah. All right. Can you guys hear me okay? I don't think I really need to stand behind that. So you got a little glimpse of what I've been doing in the last couple of years, but I didn't start out that way. I started in traditional print journalism, long form, monthly. And really, I had no business being a journal, even aspiring to be in journalism. I didn't have that ambition when I was a student at CC. But I had an ambition for curiosity. I was curious. I wanted to move to New York City. I wanted to see the world. I wanted to do all those things, but I didn't have a specific goal in mind. It kind of happened to me in circumstances of people that I knew and people that I met. And I really had no business ending up writing cover stories once I got a job. None of it made any sense at all. But since I've been at Vanity Fair for 20 plus years now, I've taken every opportunity that I could possibly have at that magazine. I've been in Iraq. I took did part of a USO show when General Franks was over there in 2003. Was embedded with the troops, this whole other experience. I went to London and launched the British edition. I went out to the West Coast. I started the Hollywood issue. I was at the very first Oscar party, which is now the most famous party in the world. My very first cover story was Reese Witherspoon. From then, I've written dozens of them. And my first feature I did was on Jessica Lynch, who was the first POW of the war. And it's been an amazing ride. And a lot of it has changed in that time. I mean, I think about in 2008, no one had really even embraced Twitter, or it was still MySpace or whatever. I'm in a MySpace page. Facebook was still like, oh, wait till you see Facebook's the new thing. That was still just at Harvard. The changes have been huge. And if I look at it, my own personal changes, when I first moved to LA, my phone was bolted into my car. And now if I don't have my iPhone, it's like I'm functioning without a hand. And I think the response is like every 3.5 minutes we look to it. I think the average human is basically just trained to constantly check and refresh. Magazines have folded in the time that I've been there. People have just gone away. Great startups that were doing well, but they didn't have enough to carry them through. Websites were started. They're terrible and archaic. And ours, for a long time, you would go on to vanityfair.com, and it was easier to Google my name or Google a story and get to it that way than it was actually able to go on the site. They spent a fortune spending money to fix that problem, and it only made it worse. It was like what I said, the Studebaker. We took a Mercedes and rebuilt the Studebaker. I don't know if anybody you remember that reference. Lord knows I am not that old, but the Studebaker is famous for the car that was the biggest lemon in the history of the automobile industry. So that's kind of where Vanity Fair has been with the web, but we are catching up at lightning speed. We are all very smart and dexterous, and we are adapting to the climate and the change with what we do and what we cover. Graydon Carter, my boss, is very political. We've been very fortunate. He's super anti-Bush. He started this whole thing with his editor's letters that then turned into a book. We cover presidents. We cover Lindsay Lohan. We kind of do it all. And I think about my trajectory. I get asked this a lot of times. If Natalie came and worked for me for the summer, I'm sure a lot of it was fun, and maybe not all that fun at times, but for the most part, the takeaway was good. But people come and ask me all the time, I want to be you, I want your job, how did you get your job, you know, what did you do? And it's kind of hard to answer that question, because really, I am my job. I created my job. And how I created my job, like I said, I didn't have a journalistic background. My parents weren't journalists. I'm dyslexic. I cannot spell my own name. Natalie can attest to that. I have to give my assistant spelling test. I wish I was kidding, and I'm not. And I am such a bad speller that even with spell check, I still don't get it right, because I'm trying to think of a word and I don't even have enough of the four letters to get it correct that it'll give me the correct one. So nothing in that would make me feel confident enough to think that I could write, to make me think that I could work in journalism. I always felt like the underdog, like the stupid one in the room. And especially within Condé Nast, it's a very elitist culture, at least it was initially, where most everybody comes from either a Spence, a kind of prep school background, 90% of them from Ivy Leagues. And I certainly didn't have that with my shoe boots and lacrosse kilt and my bright colored t-shirt from Canal Jeans. But what I did have was an unflailing ability to just take it head on. And that's what I do think CC does give you. I knew that I could do it. It may not be pretty, but it would be honest and it would be on time and it would be accurate. And I turned that into my own cottage industry. So I was surrounded by a bunch of kids that were definitely more well-traveled, more well-read than I was, more privileged than I had been brought up, seemingly so, from the environment they grew up in. But what I had that they didn't have was a kind of tenacity and toughness that came, I think part of it comes from being dyslexic, because you're kind of comfortable being the underdog. I was comfortable in a position of not always winning, but knowing the big picture in mind. Like, the experience for me was worth it. It wasn't about getting credit. It wasn't about having my name here on the masthead. None of that has ever mattered to me, and I was never driven by money. I felt like all of that would just kind of come, and it's a good thing I wasn't driven by money, because publishing, you make no money. but it wasn't my primary focus. And what my focus was the experience of working with my colleagues, the experience of, doing research and being a fact checker and learning, listening to those tapes and going, doing all that extra stuff that I did to make sure that my work was correct. And at the same time, having a tremendous amount of humility, or I call it like a high shit tolerance. And if you've seen The Devil Wears Prada, and I talked about this earlier today, but not really at the length I would have liked to. That movie is excellent. It's meringue. It's fantastic. I feel like you watch it and you can't turn it off. Reminds me a lot of the John Hughes movies that I grew up with. But I lived that life, and that life was really, it was worse in a different way. The stakes were really much, much higher, and you did run around, and you didn't look that good. None of us really looked like Anne Hathaway. But it did teach you that kind of, for me, it taught me just to get it done, put your nose to the grindstone, and learn while you're doing it. And the fun in life is really getting there. The experience is really when you're in the trenches, not when you're at the top looking back. It's really where you guys are right now. And when Diane and I were first talking, and there's a lot of doom and gloom in terms of publishing, and there should be. Listen, we've seen newspapers shut down. I mean, the Rocky Mountain News, I had a paper out. That was my newspaper, when I was a kid living in Denver, and that's gone. And Cookie Magazine and like endless Gourmet Magazine, huge Condé Nast brands. Gourmet's been around, was around for like 100 years, and it no longer exists. So there's a lot of validity in this kind of, no one's ever going to read a newspaper again. It's all, everything's going online and blah, 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 blah. Which in part is, it's probably, part of that is true. Will there be 5 newspapers in the end? We were having a great conversation at dinner about how this kind of analog obsession, like maybe with the hipsters that are curing bacon in their backyard in Brooklyn, maybe they want to read a newspaper. Like, there's part of that, I think, that does come back. Every generation does want to. What my generation, we were obsessed with white trash and Elvis Presley, and that was every guy wanted to wear trucker hats and look that way. Now it's kind of, they're black and red checked jacket seems to be the look. I was in Boulder, everyone was wearing it. I'm in New York, everyone's wearing it. You're in Silver Lake in LA, everyone's wearing it. It's kind of the universal uniform. But I think for you guys, it's such an exciting time. I mean, I wish I was 21 and starting all over again, because there's so many mediums. When I was starting out, like I said, there was a roadmap, and I'd never fit into that roadmap of how that was going to be. But I had a roommate. She had a boyfriend. I wanted to get to New York. I was staying on someone's couch. There was an opening as a fact checker. I didn't really know what a fact checker was, but I had read Bright Lights, Big City. That was then made into a movie. Actually, I saw the movie. Didn't really read the book, but I lied. And I was like, I know what fact checking is. I can do this. So I went in for my interview, and it was the Conde Nast Building at 350 Madison Avenue, nestled between Brooks Brothers and Paul Stewart. Highly intimidating, with revolving doors and a giant kiosk when you walk in that was run by a very domineering woman named Margaret. I later learned her name. Would you like to buy that magazine? Because you couldn't look at, if you were to go and look at a magazine, she would force you to buy it. It was pouring down rain. I looked like a drowned rat. I had a perm. I had a Ann Taylor waiter jacket on and a borrowed Laura Ashley skirt and shoe boots. I looked terrible. I wouldn't hire me. And I went for the interview, and in my interview to be a fact checker, they had asked me a bunch of questions, and on my resume, Colorado College, what is that? Is that the women's college? Is that Boulder? Do you ski? Like, those were all the questions that basically came up. No one had any idea what that was. But they did see that I spoke Italian and that I worked for Gary Hart. And it was that one moment where those skills got my foot in the door. And in that very day, I had to go and speak Italian and asked someone a story about Primo Levi that was in Italy, and I asked the question, did he find the body this way, did he find the body that way, and they're in the middle of fact-checking a story, but they had no one that spoke Italian, and I walked in, and he was basically, let's see if you're bullshitting or not, and I did it. I didn't think I was ever going to get the job. 3 weeks later, they called my house in Denver, where I'd driven back cross country with a friend who was going for her senior year. And I moved back to New York. I literally got home, and that day got the phone call. And the next day I was on a plane to New York. And that's basically been my life ever since. I just keep moving. In that time, I've managed to get married and have two kids, and they move right along with me. But part of that is I never said no to an opportunity. And when it came to write a cover story, I wanted to do little pieces. I was able to do little pieces here and there on a spotlight on Jenna Rollins, because I was obsessed with John Cassavetes, and I convinced them that I was the only person that could write it, and I was terrified. And 250 words now that I could write in 20 minutes with my eyes closed, I sweated about it and I stressed about it, and it took over my world, and I wrote it. And that's part of what CC was great about, is that kind of block where I knew I could do it, I knew I could get through it. As soon as I pushed through that intimidation and realized that it was pretty straightforward. And when I realized that I could actually have a life as a writer, even though I don't necessarily identify as one, I identify more as a talker and a storyteller than a writer. But it was Jessica Lynch. And I work a lot with Annie Leibovitz. And what that means is you don't skip to work when you work for Annie Leibovitz. She is the most difficult person on the planet Earth. And I've met all of them, so that's saying a lot. But there we found ourselves in, I don't even remember how we got there, but like a plane to a train to like a rickshaw to a hike to a bus ride to get to the place in West Virginia where Jessica Lynch lived. And I don't know if you guys remember Jessica Lynch. If you vaguely, I'll just catch you up. It was the first W started the war. She was the first female prisoner of war and was in a hospital, and it was this first kind of, you know, NCIS type of rescue in the middle of the night. They took her out. Every bone had been broken. You know, was she raped? Was she not raped? America, she's a hero. She couldn't walk. And they were in a convoy. And it was, they went over a landmine. They saw combat. Landmine and then combat. She doesn't remember any of it, other than her best friend at the time was killed. But it was the first time a woman was in combat in that capacity. So it was huge news. And also it brought the war, it brought a face to the war and what it actually was going on there, and the kind of different war that we were fighting than the one that we're all accustomed to. And we had gotten the story, we went there. So I'm clad with all of that is Annie and her crowd, which is like, just think of New Yorkers, black Prada, like they couldn't have looked more out of place. Me being from Colorado, I was like, I know how to, I'm in a fry boot and I look much different. And I went in to meet with her and talk to her, and we were talking about how we're gonna photograph and do all this stuff. And coming back, I wasn't writing the story. Dominic Dunn was going to write it. I don't know if you know who Dominic Dunn is, but Dominic Dunn was going to write the story. And I remember telling him all these details. Oh, my God, you wouldn't believe it. And they had this camera. And then her room was done by this. And so I was just absorbing it all. And he said, you know what? You need to write the story. You need to write it just like you talk. So I started writing just like I talk. And from there, I did a bunch of stuff. And then what you saw, how that came to be, all this stuff on camera and via video, came because we needed to put content on the web. Well, how are we ever going to get anybody to vanityfair.com? How are we ever going to get anybody to click? And video is all anybody wants to see on the web. So I started figuring out a way to do video, and it started with a couple little interviews that were kind of guerrilla style, and it ended up looking much more like what you guys saw there, which is to look at is so different than how it started, but that's only 2 years old, really, or from 2009, maybe, was the first thing that we did at John Hamm. I can't remember when that was. But it moves very, very quickly. And what I've noticed as I've kind of embraced the digital world, and I look at magazines and I look at newspapers and kids that are coming out of school and want to write and be a journalist or go to journalism school or write for web or have a blog or have their own thing, is it's a phenomenal opportunity. You guys are right on the precipice because it's the wild frontier. And before, when there was one way to get in, you had to go through HR at the Death Star of Condé Nast, and how could you get through there? And I did not get hired. I should clarify this. I was not hired. I was a freelancer. And I had to work there for almost 2 years before they would actually deign to hire me. So it makes them seem like the enemy, but it was just, they weren't the enemy, but it's just the way things were done. There was a certain protocol, there was a certain slot you had to fit into, and if you didn't fit into that slot, then it was really difficult to make it there. Now, it's wide open. If you have talent, if you're good at what you do, there are more platforms for you to express that than there ever were for me. And for my generation coming up. I mean, you guys, I say this all the time, even because I am in Hollywood and I look at it, it is a one-horse town, and you're like, oh my God, there is so much opportunity and so little talent. There's a reason why Mad Men is still the greatest show, because it's a great show. There's a reason why Game of Thrones, it's a great show, and there's a lot of other crap. Okay, so if you are a great journalist, if you have an opinion, if you have a passion, if you are, you know, your passion is not having a passion, you now have a platform on which to prove that. And if you build it, they will come. I mean, how many times have I read about a Twitter conversation turned into a pilot, that turned into a show, that turned into a movie, that turned into a book, that turned into a New York Times bestseller? There's so many more things in which you could be heard and your voice can be out there. To me, that's really exciting. The most important thing you have to know is it doesn't come quickly. You have to build it, and you have to cultivate it, and you have to stay curious, and you have to stay on top of it, and you have to stay, you know, authentic to who you are. And what the power of your voice is the most powerful thing that you have to offer. But having said that, coming in to be an assistant, so let's say you go and you get a job at Esquire or Hearst or Condé Nast or the Chicago Tribune or the Washington Post or the New York Times or New York or whatever it is, you also have to know when to listen and when to put your ego aside. And I'd have to say a lot of my success has been because I knew when to not put my ego in the room and when to think of the bigger picture and when to be like, oh, okay, I wouldn't do this this way, but it's interesting how they're doing it this way. And let me see how that's going to turn out. Or I think this is the lead story, or I think that maybe, you know, just kind of sitting on it and letting that happen as opposed to coming on guns a-blazing, you know, in a work environment. But in terms of having your own sites and coming up with your own apps and all this stuff is amazing. And it's like and I talked about this earlier today. There's so much freedom and failure now. Your generation, it's okay to fail. It's great. Your failures count as much as your successes. It's amazing. It's like, well, I tried to do this app and it didn't work, but I, you know, you did what? Like, it's incredible the amount of stuff that you guys are able to do. You're just a lot smarter than we are. You have more brain power. Your brain's been used better. We were busy. I don't know what we were doing, but your brain has been utilized in a much different way. And you still have enough where your parents kind of remember. You know, you grew up with parents where it wasn't, you're not quite digital natives. So you still can bring that nostalgia in to what you guys do in the future, whatever that is. But I would encourage it. I wouldn't say journalism dead by any chance. It's not dead. It's the opposite. It's more alive now than it's ever been, and you can see that by how news breaks. You know, if Madoff, think of Madoff. Okay, what about that guy that called the CEC and said, "Hey, this guy, something's tricky with this guy. You should investigate him." What about if that guy had a blog and he was saying, hey, this Madoff, he's fucked up. I don't know. Someone should run his numbers. I've been running his numbers, and they've been posting their blogs, and their blog kept posting. He's like, Madoff. And then Huffington Post put it up with a big headline that said, Wall Street tycoon question for validity, blah, 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 blah. Then everyone's going to click on it, and then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, Madoff, what's happening with Madoff? What have happened? We don't know. And so they sent the experts to look at him 2 years down the road, and he basically distorted an entire economy and the lives of thousands. So that, to me, is very exciting. The same thing that happened in the Arab Spring, the same thing that happens in Iran, the same thing that happens in, you know, with the nuclear reactor in Japan. That's how information is coming, and you still need journalists to assimilate that information to get the facts. I mean, there's nothing more inaccurate than an eyewitness, they always say, in a crime. That's the worst thing, is an eyewitness. Half the time, they're always wrong. But if you have eyewitnesses that are going around in Japan with their own Geiger counters telling you what radiation they're seeing, we can't. It's incredibly exciting. But you need a journalist to figure out what that story is, to present the right angle, to assimilate all the facts, and to, you know, create a dialogue, a narrative that everyone wants to read. That's giving, that's compelling, and that's what doesn't happen when everyone, oh, I'm a journalist, oh, I'm a blogger, or I'm doing whatever. That's one thing, but there is another thing that's called. They're two different things, and I think people like to say like, oh, there's no such thing as journalism anymore, but I would disagree. I think it's more exciting. It's great, because you have so many more resources out there. You can go look and follow someone on Twitter and find out what they're thinking and what they're doing and what they know, and are you interested in that? Is that a story? Is that an angle? I mean, that's the harder part, but that's the more exciting part. You're not as pigeonholed. What you think is interesting, someone else thinks is interesting. That's the other thing I learned. If I'm thinking about it, other people are thinking about it. I'm not so lofty up. Like if this is something I'm seeing, if I'm seeing this pattern, then it's something we should talk about, or it's something we should write about, or it's something we should cover. And that's certainly for Vanity Fair. I'll see that with actors or pop culture or things that are happening. It's like, you know, I've been noticing this has been going on and on and on and on. And I remember with the Iraq War in the USA Today, thinking, we're going to go to war. Every week there was like another story about how Saddam Hussein, it was like they were prepping us. It was almost like it was a government newspaper prepping us for when this moment was going to happen. So people would be like, well, of course it's going to happen. Just look what I've been reading. But I don't know. It's fun. It's good. I've enjoyed my job. I've had good days and bad days. Glamour job, always. That's always what it means. A lot of fun things and a lot of hard things, but it's been a great career, and I enjoy doing this stuff, and I've delving further into social media with my Twitter views and my Google Plus Hangouts, what I'll be doing. I'll see how much I want to do of that. But I do think it's an interesting medium to at least pay attention to and to investigate. And I'd like to actually ask you guys, open it up if anybody has any questions for me.